from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I am Ryan Harkness.
Today on the show, I guess what we're having is our rapture show, is the best way to describe this.
With such fanfare and feeling, how can this be anything but awesome?
A rapture show, I guess.
Well, you know, after the Moses trilogy, everybody's been just sort of like, I don't know, beaming sunshine all over the place. So no pressure or nothing. But today we're going to be talking about the reason why we have this show, which is this May 21st date that's kicking around, and everybody's going to have a hilarious laugh-a-thon when that happens, and we'll explain a little bit about that. And we'll also talk about the Book of Revelation itself, because I just finished reading it, and we're going to give it a bit of the Bible story treatment, but in a different way. We're just going to talk about it, because it's not really a story. It's just a whole bunch of crazy shit, and we'll talk about what that crazy shit is all about.
It's really as close as you can get to, like, a crazy person on the street corner yelling ridiculous, angry bullshit at you.
It's pretty wild stuff. It's pretty wild stuff. I think you're going to appreciate the method, the really creative methods that they just talk about in terms of how they annihilate people. And it makes it sound like almost like, you know, when you're playing a video game and you have to sort of like unlock all these things. That's what it seems like. Just the part where in Revelations, when we'll get to when he starts opening the seal and there's like seven seals, like, woo! You know, there's like, I half expect there to be like Juno Reactor making the score for this wackiness. And the last thing we're going to be talking also a little bit about, I hope if we have enough time, is how I think Revelation has really shaped Christianity as it is. I want to talk about that more on the bonus show, because that's sort of something that I'm still sort of like...
Formulating,
but I did want to sort of like include just the beginnings of it, just to you know, entice anybody who wants to listen to the bonus show when I do a little bit more research and spend a little bit more time thinking about that. But first, let's talk about Harold Camping. Let's talk about the reason why we're doing this show. Let's do a little recap. So there's this this minister in the U.S. called Harold Camping. He's a kind of old hat when it comes to predicting the end of the world. He, in 1992. He had predicted that the end times would happen in 1994, September of it, I don't remember what date. And when that failed to occur, you know, he sort of like went crawling back into a hole. But now, sort of, he went back to his old tricks and decided that he was going to just create some mathematical formula that has significance to him, which would recalculate the day when Jesus would come back and pretty much slaughter everybody.
I love these mathematical formulas. I love numerology in general and how people freak out about it. I can totally imagine this Harold guy sitting in his fucking office with Da Vinci Code music in the background as he figures out this mathematical formula for when Jesus is coming back. By Jove, it's in a year.
he thinks he's having like one of those beautiful mind moments.
Well, he kind of is, you know what I mean?
I suppose. The whole thing about, I guess, you know, you're mentioning numerology, and you're going to hear this a lot throughout here, because basically people make all kinds of codes to try to decipher some type of meaning out of the Bible. And I think that I'm trying to remember there was a movie that dealt with that that whole topic. I can't quite remember. I remember now. It was called I watched it last night. Why can I not remember this?
Was it Pi or the number 13?
The Omega Code. The Omega Code.
I like that name.
I watched it last night. I decided, because this is a rapture movie, and the main dude is kind of like a motivational speaker a la Tony Robbins. And he's basically following around the Antichrist for a while. And the Antichrist has access to some kind of Bible code thing, which deciphers everything that he's like. It's basically a code, a manual for him to follow, to how to get into power. And, you know, they have their typical, I will offer 7 years of peace. Like, why just 7 years? You know, it's like, what the fuck, man? Who signs a peace treaty that just says, well, 7 years and then we talk again? What the fuck is the point of that peace treaty?
Especially if it's supposedly a supernatural one. You figure 7 years is nothing, nothing.
Yeah, it's a pretty short time. Anyways, so he's a mythology expert, is how they describe it. I don't know. Doctor of mythology, presumably. They don't really go into details. I mean, it's played by Casper Van Dien. You remember him? He was the dude from Starship Troopers whose career went, like, totally nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the reasons. And you know, the bad guy is, I think, is the dude from Austin Powers, or also known, also in Logan's Run. Remember that guy?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
British
yeah,
dude? Yeah. He's supposed to play the Antichrist, and, you know, he is British, which helps, but he really cannot pull that off. He really cannot.
Well, obviously he doesn't play it campy like Austin Powers, right? He's actually doing this as a serious thing?
I know, but maybe it's just because I saw the Austin Powers movie that I just can't take him seriously anymore. But there was no way to take him seriously as the devil.
Nah, that's bad casting. I saw some vampire movie where Dracula was just the worst casting choice ever. Actually, yeah, it was the latest that Van Helsing movie.
Oh, God. I didn't waste my time watching that. It's just stupid.
It was quite awful. But yes, their Dracula was perhaps the worst cast character in the history of the world. Maybe except for this guy as Satan.
So there's a scene, like, the whole movie is just awful. It's just very long and awful. But there's a scene where he's, like, on Oprah, jumping around. Well, not Oprah, but, you know, the equivalent of Oprah, whatever. And he's jumping around, like, a la Tom Cruise around all over the place. In fact, he looks exactly like Tom Cruise. You know, he's, like, similar height. The only difference is that, I guess, his, you know, he's not dressed in a weird turtleneck thing. But he's just jumping around all crazy, like, just in the same way. But that was actually, the movie was made in 1999, so this is before. This is, like, predicted what Tom Cruise would do, by the way. So he, after his weird jump around thing, he starts telling people about this Bible code that he has, and that he's like, it predicted Diana's death and that kind of stuff. And the funny thing is, those codes actually exist. And they're a specific form, they're like an ancient form of numerology called gematria, I think it's called. Gematria, I forget. Anyways, it's where you take, you create a code that transforms numbers into letters, and then you try to find out if these letters have any significance. You know, it's part of a much broader kind of history of people trying to get meaning out of fucking nothing. Because, I mean, you can take, you can take any piece, any document, and apply the same algorithms as they use for the Bible code, and you'll get crazy things. You know, it's just that the way that words are assembled, the way that the code works, it's bound to find letters that form certain patterns, and then you associate meaning to those things. It's like, that's the inherent problem of this whole numerology thing that you love. I hate it. It's like fucking nonsense, and it's been around forever. We can never get rid of it. Never. People are like, numbers have meanings. Shut the fuck up. They're numbers. Jesus.
Unless you're doing math.
Unless you're doing math. Okay, well, let's go back and let's talk about Harold Camping and his math. So some of you might be wondering, why is May 21st the day where he says this is when Jesus is coming back? You know, especially since all of his fellow Christians are like, oh, it says specifically that no one will know. Jesus says he'll come like a thief in the night. And by the way, he makes special mentions to say that people should remain clothed because he's just going to come in the night and he doesn't want to see you naked, apparently. He thinks
that Jesus said this?
Yeah. This is in Revelation here. He says that you should probably, like, it would be wise to keep your clothes on at all times, because he will come like a thief in the night. So, hey,
this is Revelation Jesus. So it's not Jesus from the Gospels. It's this is whoever wrote that new one.
Yeah,
it would be kind of like, you know, every so often the guy who writes the Nancy Drew book dies. The guy who writes the Hardy Boys books, dies, and they replace him with a new one. So it's practically like there's new Hardy Boys. This is like the other author of Jesus.
Yeah. Well, they're all like that, by the way. It's a Hardy Boys mystery. So Camping decided, first of all, he has his own method of calculating when the universe began, by the way, which is 11,013 years ago. I think it's on in September or something like that. So he's got a date of when the universe was specifically created. And then he goes on to make a calculation about, like, the way that he gets that number, sorry, is he essentially just calculates it based on the begats, right? But he makes an assumption based on nothing, of course, that whenever it says, well, this person begat this person, he makes the assumption of saying, well, they're not necessarily direct relatives. They're probably a grandson, so they're the grandson. So now I have a whole bunch more years to play around with. So that's what he does. That's his math. That's what he does with math.
God, it's a rape of math.
Okay, so he also uses this, his retardo math, to have calculated that the death of Jesus happened on April 1st, 33 AD. And from that starting point, he calculates a number that's 5 times 10 times 17. All right, so you're like, well, what do those numbers mean? Well, according to his Bible code, Gematria, or whatever it's called, number 5 means atonement, number 10 means completeness, and number 17 means heaven. And he multiplies those numbers together, and then he does that again, because he has to, because it doesn't produce enough numbers, and then bam, he's left with a number, 722,500. His explanation, by the way, of why you have to double the number is just because, like, now Jesus means it or something. Like, it's just, that's his bad math. That's where it comes from.
Well, I can tell where he went wrong already. He didn't factor in the fact that the Earth has 4 corner simultaneous 4-day time cubes in every 24-hour rotation. 4 corner days, cubes, 4 days. Quad Earth, man.
I dare you to disprove my time cube math. So that's where the day comes from. Now, as far as Harold Camping believes, by the way, May 21st doesn't mean that that's when, like, just the Earth is annihilated. That happens in October.
So the rapture happens on the 21st, and then we all get annihilated a couple months later?
Right, and we're going to talk about what those months involve in when we review Revelations.
Okay, but before we move on, can I just... Because here's what really confuses me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I saw some photos on the internet of, like, billboards. I can only assume that there's, like, just a couple of billboards and that nobody's really paying attention to this guy. I'm just wondering how is anybody paying attention to this, even as a joke? Like, what's the deal? Is this guy, like, big... does he have a congregation of a certain size or something, or...
Well, number one, I mentioned that he's an old hat at this, so I think he knows how to really get to people. He knows how to basically use biblical language to essentially convince people that he knows when the end is coming. And remember that for a lot of Christians, this is the thing that they find is like this is the most important news, man. And every one of them is convinced that it's going to happen within their lifetime. So guess what? Someone gives you a date that happens within your fucking lifetime, and you're going to be like, ooh, well, what's your evidence? And when that fails, it's like, huh, well, that wasn't it, but this event is still happening. I'm just going to find the next fucking guy that tells me what date it is based on his retardo math. This is how it is, man. It's just jumping from date to date, and it's been happening for a fucking long time. It's been happening since like the 18th or 19th century, where everybody's been, at least in America, because this is specifically a huge American thing with evangelicals. And I think it dates back to this guy called Cotton Mather, who's this evangelical preacher who started using the word rapture to describe all the events of essentially two passages of the Bible that mention something that sounds like what you all know as rapture. Okay, the first comes from 1 Thessalonians, and the second one comes from Matthew 24, Matthew 24 to 29. So that encompasses essentially the different views of what happens when it's Armageddon. So Thessalonians says that essentially you should all rise up into the clouds, and the Lord shall descend him, you know, he's going to come down.
Do you want me to read it for you?
Please,
I can read it.
Do. Read.
Okay. For this We say unto you by word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. Do you like my reading?
I love it.
For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. I don't know what the trump of God is. And the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord.
Okay, so that's from Thessalonians. Do you want to read Matthew now? In your special voice, because you got to do the whole thing now.
Ah, damn it. I didn't realize there was a bunch of Matthew. Okay, I can do that.
All right, read Matthew.
Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, and one end of heaven to the other. Oh, sorry, from one end of heaven to the other.
It was very close to being perfect.
I know! That's the stressful part about it, man.
Don't worry about it. Anyways, those are the two passages that essentially make up rapture. And then the rest is kind of taken from a bunch of other elements which are extrapolations, which are interpretations, which essentially amount to most of what you get when you have religion, right? It's like, sure, there's the Bible, that's the basis of most of the Christian sects, but everybody's got their own version of everything.
Is it kind of like some people have some crazy guy named Cotton who pointed out these two verses he really liked and just blew them out of proportion to everything else?
No. It's kind of like they're post-millennialist, amillennialists. There are people who are kind of like, okay, they disagree about the, you know, whether or not you're going to go floating up to heaven first or meet God halfway, come back down. How long the tribulation is going to happen, if the tribulation happens at all, if it's all one event, if it's many events. You know what I mean? Like, these are all just things, speculations from people, because they're trying to base their reality on a fucking book of fiction, for God's sakes. Of course it's going to get weird. Just wait until we start going into the description of Revelation and why, as a volume, as a book, it's been really controversial. Really, really fucking controversial. But it's kind of an important part of the Bible, and there's a reason why it's included in most of the versions of them. Because that's the kind of part of the story that ties everything up. That's the necessary part of it, because otherwise, guess what? Your Messiah's a no-show. He isn't a Messiah, right? You need it. You need him to come back. Otherwise, the to-be-continued doesn't really fulfill the kind of need that everybody has. So the Revelation, what this is it's kind of like it's a psychotic dream of murder, death, and destruction, followed by a tiny elect of individuals, all of them virgins, by the way, who come back to Earth, rule there for 1,000 years until Satan pops back out, who's then cast down to hell again, just for showing up. I don't even know why he has to be locked up for 1,000 years. We'll talk about that later. And this is the desired outcome. This is like, okay, well, Jesus died, so he didn't come back, so what the fuck is supposed to happen? Okay, well, here's an acid trip about what I think is going to fucking happen. And at the end of the Revelation is like, I testify as Jesus Christ that this is my testimony, and you can't remove this from the Bible. You know what I mean? Like, do not... You have to include this, is basically the clause. So everyone's scared to shit to not include it, and you got to put something. So they put Revelations, and it's crazy. It's fucking crazy. Do you want to go into how crazy it is?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Now, first of all, the Revelation is a kind of game of telephone. All right, even the author, John, who is not John the same one who wrote one of the Gospels, that's generally understood by almost anybody. He was living on an island in Greece called Patmos, so it's very unlikely that was John the Apostle. But anyway, some fools like to delude themselves and think that it is. So anyways, this John gets a message. So God tells Jesus to tell an angel to tell John that he's going to come back. All right, so this is the first part of the telephone game. It's usually how anything gets really crossed. Like, trust me. Next, what happens is kind of like he starts going on an acid trip, right? So he describes everything that he sees now. So I guess the angel shows him a vision of things to come. So at first, what he sees is a gigantic godlike figure made of jasper stone sitting on a throne with a crazy fucking rainbow in the background. All right.
This is already really sounding like a psychedelic, like, do they have mushrooms growing on that island, or is potmost just code for most pot?
Oh, wow, that was clever. Okay, so
that was a 1-2.
Right beside this throne that he's sitting on are huge, gigantic beasts. The first one of these beasts looks like a lion, except for it has eyes all over its fucking body. The other one, it looks like a bull. It, too, has eyeballs all over the place. The other one is an eagle, same eyeball problem. And the last one with the eyeball problem has a face of a man. So it's creepy. And they're all singing a song. Like, holy, holy, holy. You know, like, Revelations is a fucking musical, people. Okay, I can't tell you how many times everyone's breaking out into song. Telling God what a good job he's doing, by the way. So they're all singing and dancing. So these creepy fucking animals are dancing and singing. And around the throne, too, is a huge council of Elrond-style smaller thrones with a whole bunch of kings, like 24 of them, who all have crowns. And then they throw their crowns in the water and start praising the stone god. And they also join in the singing. And there's a fucking chorus happening.
This is strange. So who is the stone god then? Is the stone god real god?
Yeah.
Or is the stone god stone god is Yahweh.
Stone god is Yahweh. He's just made of jasper stone. He's a giant stone god. Who's like shiny and red. Okay. So so these other kings are sort of like jumping in, and the chorus is like, you were worthy, our Lord, to receive glory and honor and power because you created all things. So they're like, you are awesome. You deserve everything that you're about to get. Then all of a sudden, this I can barely explain it, but this dead-looking lamb with seven eyeballs, like it looks dead, like its neck looks broken or whatever. It's fucked up. But it walks like a man, and it has a scroll, like a fucking massive scroll in its hands. And there's like seven seals on it, and they're like, who will break this seal? And then everyone's like, no one can do it. And then all of a sudden, everybody breaks out into a song again, and there's like a crescendo, because like 10 million angels join in a choir, and this is, I shit you not, the lyric is, it is, worthy is the lamb that was slaughtered to receive power, wealth, wisdom, might, honor, glory, and blessing. So the seven-eyeballed lamb that's all bloody is Jesus, in a way. It's a representation.
This is so stupid. This is what I was telling you about. The problem, if we just go point by point through everything in Revelation, it's just a list of really stupid shit.
Right.
It's already frustrating me.
Okay, well, just keep going, because everybody wants to hear this, because they're curious. They want to know. They just want to know. And finally, just as sort of like they round up the chorus, every single animal on the planet joins in. So it's kind of like, that's what I'm telling you. It's a fucking musical, right? It's almost like The Lion King, except for just way more trippy.
Yeah.
So, okay, after that, everybody says amen. End of Act 1. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, time to summon the fucking terrors. So they start they start breaking the seals open. And every time that bull with all the eyeballs keeps saying, like, come, like every time they break a seal, right, because they break the first seal, and this badass with the crazy fucking sword comes out. He's, like, got a crown. All these motherfuckers have crowns, by the way. It's got
Are kings magical? It certainly seems like the Bible wants to imply that there is that royalty has magical blood and that kings are seriously more special than other
Oh, yeah,
humans.
That's not uncommon. That's definitely not uncommon. I mean, think of it. The King of England is also the ruler of the church. I mean, it's pretty sweet. So he's got a sword. No, sorry. He's got a bow, and he's on a white horse. He appears, and then another badass appears once the seal's broken. He's like, come, and this badass is like on a red horse. And he's, like, really scary. He's, like, war, you know. And the third badass is, like, this dude on a black horse. And he has a scale in one hand. And then this other crazy-looking bad... He's the most badass. He's, like, Death riding on a fucking skeleton horse, you know. So these are the first four... The first four seals are busted out. And these crazy motherfuckers, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, comes out and God tells, all right, you can kill one quarter of the world's population. So, go nuts. So they have a kill quota for one quarter. Because, you know, this shit's about to get creative. All right? Because the whole thing is that you can use the sword, so they kill them by swords, by plague and famine, and even by wild animals. They use the animals, like animal power. You know, like the guy with the heart ring in Captain Planet? Yeah, imagine him, but evil.
Interesting. Well, one of the interesting parts of this is that they're talking about, you know, kill a quarter of the world by sword, plague, famine, and wild animals eating people. That wild animals eating people one is an interesting... Do you think that was like a common fear that society would break down and then everybody would just get eaten by wolves again? They weren't too far removed from that period of time. I'm sure even back then, if you were a shepherd or something like that, I'm sure there was a bunch of shepherds that tried to stop their sheep from getting eaten, and they just got taken out by
animals.
Yeah, it's
probably pretty fucking... Like, you know what? When you're not living in a super civilization, nature's probably pretty fucking scary.
I mean, even in Canada, we had that Olympic chick who got eaten by a bear. It was very embarrassing for us all.
It was very embarrassing, wasn't it?
What happened to your Olympic gold medalist? Oh, a bear ate her. This just happens sometimes in Canada.
It does, though. That's the whole thing. Anyways, all right, so they go out and they just, you know, they're a slaughtering. Meanwhile, so it's, okay, the fifth seal breaks open, and all the souls of the people that have ever been directly killed by God start asking him, sort of like, when are you going to be satiated? Essentially, and God says, not until everybody else is dead. So then they break the sixth seal, and then there's a shitload of earthquakes. The sun turns black. The sky rolls up like a scroll, if that makes any fucking sense to you. The moon turns blood red. Stars start falling from the sky and lighting everything on fire. And then the mountains move places, which either means they crumble or they just moved somewhere. And all the islands sink, although they do this a few times, so I guess the islands sink for the first time. And so everybody goes to hide in a cave, or around caves. Although I don't know what they hope to find in a cave, but this is where they're hiding out. Four crazy angels, they at the four different corners of the earth, so your little four-corner math time cube thing is not too far off. They are just about to also sort of like hop in on this carnage, but now they decide that they're going to find 144,000 Jews and put a mark on them. And once they have the mark, they're like, well, you won't be harmed because there's some crazy shit that's about to be happened. So they kind of give them an invincibility thing, I guess. I don't even know what it is. The protection of God. And then, so they go on a rampage. And then finally the seventh seal opens, and then a lot of sevens happen. So there's like seven angels with seven trumpets, and they have like seven lanterns and all this other fucking bullshit. And they grab their lanterns and they fill it with God fire. And one of them throws it at the earth and causes earthquake fires and burns like a third of the world just right there. It just explodes. So that's the when they that's the popping out of the third the seventh seal. So then they start blasting trumpets, and the first trumpet causes fire hail because they got seven trumpets right now. This is a very creative and elaborate death to all humanity, by the way. But very musical. So the first trumpet, you remember the fire hail from the Abraham Bible story episode? Remember when Sodom and Gomorrah was getting attacked? They were getting attacked. Hail stones that were also on fire, so ice fire.
Huh.
So that rains again, some ice fire.
Going old school.
He's going old school, yeah. He's using his old tricks. The second trumpet that they blast, a fire meteor, or they call it a fire mountain, but we'll just call it a meteor, hits the water and turns a third of the water into blood. I don't know, it must have hit a really big whale or something, but yeah, a third of all the oceans turn into blood and all the animals die. And then they blast another trumpet, and a star called Woodworm, I don't know why it has a name, comes down, and this star poisons a third of all the rivers in the world. And now people drink that, and they die.
So in this idea of, in the Bible, the star comes down, and it isn't a gigantic sun that would obviously envelop the earth. It's just a dot in the sky that comes down. And
One of the stars has a personality. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So this star does stuff like poisoning wells. Fourth trumpet. Yeah, this is doing stuff.
The star poisoned my well. Can't drink out of it no more. I don't know if he peed or pooed in it or what.
Fucking star. What's he thinking? All right, so the fourth trumpet. And then all of a sudden, a third of the moon and a third of the sun just get blown off. Like, boom, they're gone. There's like big chunks missing out of them now. They look like, they look like a crescent moon now, permanently.
They look like someone took a bite out of a big sky cookie.
Hey, what the fuck? So God took a bite out of the sun. That's from a trumpet blow. That's a hell of a trumpet blast. The fifth trumpet, another star man, because that's the only way I can describe it here, falls to earth, and someone gives him the key to the abyss, which is, I guess, a really gigantic hole. That's locked. So he unlocks it, and okay, this is probably one of the trippiest parts of everything, because what comes out is a bunch of locusts with human faces and scorpion tails. If that makes any sense to you.
So the locusts have. Okay, I get that. That's interesting.
Right.
Another thing, have you noticed like the constant use of locust? That's like any time there's bad news, locusts show up.
Oh yeah, a very big problem around the time. It would have been kind of the equivalent of our fear of radiation, probably,
or our fear of terrorism.
No, locusts were very real, very very real.
No,
and would eat all your crops.
Yeah, but the Pharaoh wouldn't declare a war on locust, a never-ending war.
If he was smart, he would have. Okay, so, so these locusts with human faces and scorpion tails, they come out and they sting people, but when you're stung, rather than die, you feel torment for like 5 months. So it kills you slowly, and to make things even worse, God has taken away your ability for you to kill yourself. So you try to blow your brains out, but it won't work, because he wants you to suffer for like 5 months. So that's that trumpet. The sixth trumpet, four killer angels come out, and these guys are fucking nuts. They kill like another third of all humans because they have an army of horses with lion heads on them that spit fire and that have tails that are snakes. So that's a pretty impressive army at the time. Okay, so what happens next? Hold on a second. Where are we now? What have we just said? Oh, yes. Okay, so after that's done, they decide that everyone is going to, like, Satan basically gets thrown down to Earth. That's what happens. So he's a gigantic dragon, and he's having a fight with all these angels in space. Okay? And during the fight, they beat him. Or I don't know what the fuck is happening. Well, actually, he's in space trying to eat a pregnant woman's baby that lives on the moon. Yeah,
reasonable.
That's what he's doing.
Reasonable.
Right, so he's trying to eat the baby, but then he gets, hit by some angels and shit. Oh, by the way, he knocks down a whole bunch of stars, which are still in the sky. Like, apparently, whenever they say all this stuff happens, they don't really mean it. They don't even know what they're talking about.
is this chick, like, the basis of that Schwarzenegger movie, End of Days?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And she has a crown of stars, by the way.
Once again, a shocking disrespect for what a star really is.
Shocking, yeah. So right as the baby pops out, an angel grabs it before the dragon with seven heads can eat it. Because Satan is a gigantic red seven-headed dragon. And after the angel makes sort of like kind of like that football catch, they cast down fucking Satan down to Earth after, like, you know, a very impressive battle scene. I don't know why they have to sort of drag it out. Anyways, they send Satan and all his angels, or his demon angels, down to Earth, and then he just starts fucking, like, you know, just killing everybody. So he sends us this problem, this gigantic dragon that he just sends down. It's like, hey, here's the devil, and he's back down on Earth. He's trying to eat this woman again. She's not pregnant anymore, but she's probably still fat because everybody just keeps feeding her food, even after she's had birth. So. And then the dragon sort of like blows out water, and then he tries to drown her, but then the ground opens up and the water washes away. Yeah.
It's just such a list of nonsense.
And check this out. At this point in the story, you want to get more nonsense. A 10-horned and 7-headed beast comes into town, and one of its heads looked like there's a sword through the eyeball. It looks wounded, okay? And this beast becomes like the most fucking popular thing in the world. Everybody loves this beast.
So it's the Bieber of Revelations.
Right, exactly. So this is the Bieber, so, you know, they everyone just loves him, and they're like, who can hate this thing? It's awesome, and it just starts talking blasphemies about God. You know, the same guy who's killed, like, two-thirds of the planet's population. So, obviously, a seven-headed, ten-horned beast that talks shit about such a vengeful God would be popular, I would think.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, considering the alternative, I mean, what's God done for anybody left lately? This is all past, like, all the nice people have already left, right? They got raptured away. They haven't had to deal with all this? Inconclusive?
Well, they're inconclusive. There's still no real mention in Revelation about the details of either Thessalonians or Matthew. So this is just pure Revelation, man. Pure Revelation. Mm. I'm not sort of like extrapolating nothing. All that other extrapolating, that's the shit that everybody else has been adding to the pool of nonsense since the fucking 18th century. Well, way beyond then. But at least the way that you know it, since the 18th fucking century. So yes, this popular crazy beast thing starts giving speeches and talking shit about God, and everybody's just loving it, right? And he just starts going around, and he's starting to kill people that are on God's side. Like, not the 144,000, but some other people that are still left on Earth. It's not quite clear. It doesn't appear as though everybody gets raptured. They're still on Earth, by the way.
Well, if you follow the Left Behind series, there's people who are left behind but still find God afterwards, so maybe it's some of those people.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's true. All right, so what comes next is that this other crazy fucking beast comes out of the ground now, and he speaks just like the dragon spoke, and he's very popular with everyone because he's able to, like, you know, do some magic tricks. Apparently that's really fucking, you know, frowned upon. And he commands, this part I'm not even quite sure, how to understand it. He commands everyone to build a statue of the seven-headed beast that's very popular, and then he brings it to life so that it can speak to people and cause everyone who does not worship it to be blasted away into smithereens.
So he creates a second Bieber.
And a Bieber then, statue of death.
And then the Bieber statue kills everyone? Or does, well, does everybody who doesn't worship New Bieber die?
Exactly. Okay. Everyone who doesn't worship New Bieber gets, like, you know, killed by this weapon. And then he marks everybody with, like, a tattoo of the number 666, which is really just it's a reference to King Nero, the Roman Empire. So they're all marked, branded with his, you know, number. Although if it was today, you know, as far as Christians are concerned, it would be Obama. But they would have the number of Obama. I don't know what number that would be, but whatever. Maybe it's that big O. He would brand you with the O. That's what he's going to do. So everybody who has the tattoo now, you have to have a tattoo and when you're living on Earth if you're going to buy stuff now. Because, you know, the beast is in power. And this, he's got this other, you know, the other beast thing that made that statue. He's also ruling things. So, you know, you've got to get the mark, and then you can buy things at the store. But then all of a sudden, from the hill comes the severed or the dead-looking lamb with the crazy eyeballs on the hill with a whole bunch of his, like, and 144,000 of his fucking virgin posse. And they're like, we're ready to fucking get into this bitch. This is a mountain full of virgins, essentially. Yep.
That's kind of scary.
Yeah. Yeah. So a mountain full of virgin comes over, and then an angel starts fucking screaming that everybody who believes in this beast thing, like, it's like your last chance, right? Because God is about to finish off, like, everybody. So this is last chance. If you worship this fucking beast instead of worshiping God, then you're going to fucking die. And everybody seems to turn their hearts to God, because so far he has killed a lot of people. So why would you want to worship this dude, right?
Hmm.
Like, you'd be like, what the fuck? So they say no. And all of a sudden, an angel who looks suspiciously like Jesus, but, you know, he may not be Jesus. But he comes out, and he has a crown on his head, and he's got a crazy sickle. And then one of the angels, still in heaven, you know, screams down to him. He's like, okay, well, time, it's harvest reaping time, dude. So he comes down with a sickle, and he starts fucking chopping everybody's head off. And then they take all of the bodies, and, I mean, who knows how much there is, and put it in this giant wine press. And then they just crush everyone, and blood comes pouring out, so much so that it goes up to about a horse's nose, like for 186-mile radius of blood. That's how they describe it.
So it would be like right up to the roof of my Trans Am, man.
No, it would be about to the height of your chin for 186 miles radius. That's how much blood. That's how many heads he chopped. So I don't know how much that is, but I'm sure you could calculate how many that is based on the average amount of blood you get from a person, and make the calculation backwards about how much this reaping angel has wine-pressed human beings.
Hmm.
So that's apparently there's still some left, though, because the killing isn't quite done. He begins by calling a whole bunch of angels around, and they have, like, these bowls or something like that. And he's like, okay, just take the contents in these bowls and just go out there. So they have these bowls, and the first one, he pours it on the earth, and everybody gets the fucking horrible sores all over the place. Remember from the Moses trilogy, you know, like the 10 plagues?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, remember the one where everybody has as boils and shit? So everybody's getting boiled, and they're very painful. Second angel pours it in the water, and the entire seas, like all the oceans, turn into blood, and all the ocean creatures die. So they're all dead. There's no more living creature in the ocean anymore.
Well, until they need another batch to kill later on. That's another, you know, replay or retread of another plague.
Right. I think it's the last of the animals, though. I think that one does it. Then the third angel does that to rivers and springs. That's important, so that everybody now... You can drink blood now. That's the only thing that you can drink. And meanwhile, all the angels who are doing this, by the way, after they praise God, being like, yes, God, you were awesome. You were true and just. You're doing the right thing, man. They deserve that shit. They deserve to drink blood for not worshiping you when you killed everyone. So they're like, yeah, you were awesome. They suck. So there's a little bit more of that. One of the angels pours the bowl into the sun, and then the sun starts spewing out flames, so it starts having solar flares and scorches everyone with fire. Well, not everyone, you know. Everyone in the Bible sense of everyone. A lot of people. And still these people with sores and third-degree burns, they become abstinent, and they choose not to worship him. So they keep the fifth angel pours the bowl in the throne, on the throne of the beast, and everything becomes black, so you can't see nothing anymore. Complete darkness. Another one pours a bowl in the river, and it dries up. That one's very unimpressive. And then for some weird reason, after that happens, the bad guys start having frogs coming out of their mouths.
They're just getting lazy with these, like, ideas. And then this will happen, and then this, and then this. My ideas are getting worse, but I have seven more verses.
And then finally, the last bowl he pours on, is basically an earthquake that topples every city on Earth. It's just sort of every nation collapses, a whole bunch of crazy earthquakes, and then all the islands vanish again. So maybe the bigger islands, I don't know. And there are no more mountains, and hailstones that weigh as much as human beings are falling from the sky and crushing anyone that's left alive. And then finally, Armageddon can begin.
Jeez. That was the opening band?
Yeah. That's finally Armageddon is when Jesus starts doing the killing, or God, or whatever. And he does so with, he's got, like, okay, so he comes on, he's got a white horse, he's got three crowns on his head, so it's not just one, man, he's got, like, he's a level three crown dude. He has a sword coming out of his mouth, and an iron rod, all right? And he has a tattoo on his thigh that lets you know that he is Jesus. He has a tattoo that proves it. It says the King of the Kings and Lord of the Lords.
I kind of like that trend in Revelations. Does that happen in the rest of the Bible where every so often they'll be like, yeah, and he had this badass tattoo and it said this thing?
No, you can't have tattoos. You see, that's in Leviticus. It's forbidden.
Well, whatever the heck it is.
You can't have any marks on your body.
They just say, written on this guy is this. And like, is Jesus the one with writing on his thigh, or is that another one?
Yeah.
I know there's like five or six different creatures that have shit written on them in this particular book.
Well, it has to be Jesus because he's the King of Kings. So Jesus with a sort of fur mouth and a whole army of angels come down, and now they do battle with the beast and his armies, right? Whoever sort of like was allied with the beast with the seven heads and the dragon and the ogre, and now it's time for like the fucking Lord of the Rings 3 final showdown. Well, semi-final showdown. It's probably like the second one. Yeah,
just like Lord of the Rings, this fucking book is too long.
Yeah, so anyways, they start warring, and then the beast gets captured and tossed into the lake of fire. And then so does the ogre. He gets tossed into it, you know, like the other beast that came out of the ground. And then all of a sudden the other soldiers are just killed while the god is fucking slicing them with his mouth sword. The birds eat, like, all the fucking dead bodies. And they grabbed Satan and they throw him into the abyss. And there he has to stay for 1,000 years. And then a 1,000 years later, when everybody, when God has basically tortured and killed all the remaining people, and then started to select who gets to go to heaven and who gets tossed into hell, and trust me, it's most of you. And then finally, when seated at the throne of this seven-headed, weird, dead lamb creature and the jaded onyx god, finally, when everybody is able to sit around and Jesus basically holds order for like 1,000 years, and then Satan comes out, and then Satan gets thrown in a lake of fire as soon as he comes out. He doesn't even get to say hello. He's like, I've been planning this for all, and it's over. And then to wrap up the book, like I said before, at the end it's John saying, you need to put this as official canon, Jesus testified, and he's coming any day now, any fucking moment, like a thief in the night, bitches. You don't know when it's going to happen, except for Harold Camping, of course. Who knows when it happens? And that's Revelation for you, man. That is the whole fucking crazy death, destruction thing. Don't you just feel sick to your stomach? I mean, I just feel sick having said it. I just needed to just get it out of the way.
It definitely seems very disturbing. I mean, when you think about the summary of point by point, what's going through all these chapters, it's just one really long book of everybody getting their asses kicked. If someone yeah. handed this in as work at school, I think the FBI would be called in.
It's a fucking acid trip gone bad. Is what it is. And it really, the thing that annoys me about it, and actually this goes back to, I guess, when you think about where does this tradition of eschatology come from? So that's the kind of obsession with end times, right? Why do we have this obsession? Where does it come from? It's not a new thing, because you'll notice that all the Abrahamic religions, they have their versions. Like the Jews had their kind of anti. And Islam has theirs, actually. His name is Dajjal. He's an anti-messianic figure. And he's supposed to be, like all these anti-messianic figures that, you know, this antichrist, he always has this, he always acts very Christ-like at first. So everyone is convinced that he's the Messiah come back. But really he's not. Which kind of makes you wonder if everyone waiting for the Messiah isn't a fucking crazy paranoid. Because even if your Messiah comes, you might assume that he's the Antichrist first. Just going to put that out there. It's very fucking paranoid. But get this. I like the... In Islam, in terms of their Armageddon prediction, do you want to hear it? It's much shorter.
Sure.
Okay. So, in Islam, when the Dajjal anti-messianic figure comes, you'll know he's coming because the following signs will be apparent. People will stop praying. Dishonesty will be a way of life. Falsehood will be a virtue, which is kind of true because faith is a virtue. People will mortgage their faith for worldly gains. I suppose that's me. Yeah. usury and bribery will become legitimate. And just to put that out there, I think there's every year roughly $1 trillion worth of bribes happen. So it's pretty legitimate. Imbeciles will rule over the wise.
You know, this is a pretty good one because it sounds like we're living in the end days.
Yeah.
As far as these guys are concerned.
Okay, the blood of innocents will be shed. I mean, this happens all the fucking time. Pride will be taken on acts of oppression. Rulers will be corrupt. I mean, when are they not, though? Seriously. Scholars will be hypocrites. Adultery will be rampant. Which, I mean, it is. half of adults do it. The liars and treacherous will be respected. I mean, the Pope is respected. There will be acute famine at the time. I mean, there's a famine everywhere, like at any time. Famines happen. There will be no shame amongst the people. Well, Paris Hilton is a good example of society having no shame.
Kim Kardashian, or whatever her
Kardashian.
Name is. Kardashian, there we go.
No shame.
She's really popular.
Yeah, no shame.
She's really popular, so there you go.
Children will challenge their mothers, so Lindsay Lohan style. Youngsters would perform marital relationships with their parents. That one's kind of fucked up.
This is, all of a sudden, like, I thought they'd only have, like, 5 or 6 points. What is this, like a 30-point list?
No, I'm almost done.
Old people don't like.
Just calm yourself down.
I was just curious.
Many people will worship Satan. And lastly, there will be no respect for elder people.
That was obviously written by some crotchety old dude.
No.
Who is just like, tell me some things that are horrible.
Well, the kids aren't going to listen to me. And more bitches will be like my wife and cheat on me.
It sounded like there were three that were related to, like, people not listening to old people.
at the very least. Revelations is kind of a strange blueprint when you're trying to understand Christianity. What I mean by that is you have the early Christians that have Revelations that acts as a kind of blueprint to what the future holds. And, of course, none of that happens. none of it comes to pass. So now you have a problem. You're like, well, this is supposed to be the completion of the prophecy. The Messiah is supposed to come. I mean, he even mentioned, he's like, well, none of you shall taste death before I come back. So he's a fucking no-show, right? What are you supposed to do? Well, Revelation kind of fixes that, in a sense, because it puts that date of when he comes back in, like, the undefined future. And not only that, it provides a kind of sign, you know, like, this is what you'll see when this shit is happening. And of course, none of that's ever going to happen. Stars falling out of the sky? Of course, it's all nonsense. It's insane. I've had some pretty crazy dreams, but I don't think they ever got that crazy. So I agree. There's probably some fucking drugs involved somewhere. You cannot trip this high without it. Unless you just, maybe he didn't eat or sleep for like 2 months. I don't know what. But in any case, what happened with Revelation, though, is it has influenced the church and how it's developed, because it's a lens through which they see all kinds of crises, right? Crises. So when they had the Gnostics and Arminius and all these other guys, not Arminius, excuse me, it's Arius and his apostasy. They viewed that as sort of like a sign of the Antichrist. Or when there were multiple popes, they're like, the papacy is the Antichrist. So this is how they see the world. But you obviously, I think we all understand the kind of danger that poses, right? That a belief system, a belief structure, has an obsession with death, with destruction. How, in a world in which we have that power, is that even like sensible? What if a person decides that, oh, I've interpreted Revelations all right, it means that I should do it. I am the dragon. I will explode the world. You know what I mean? Like, they look forward to this. This is the good news. This is what they're trying to tell you. Be like, any day now, Jesus is going to come down and kill everybody. Yay! Destroy the world. Yay! Blood everywhere. Yay!
Yeah, it's pretty grim when you think about it. And it really turns, I mean, because of the whole Jesus aspect, I mean, when you really think about them worshiping Jesus because he came back from the dead after being tortured for our sins, it's pretty fucked up to begin with. But slap Revelation onto the end of it and you have a full-blown death cult.
It is pretty much a death cult. And I think that you can understand, like, even in just the intensity of their beliefs, right? Like the stakes that they put, where you either believe in Jesus or you're going to go to hell forever. This kind of poisonous idea, I think, greatly influenced us for the worst. I mean, you think about all the really messed up shit that goes on in this world, and you're like, you know what? Some of it is still, a lot of it is still, in fact, religious fucking conflict. All because, yeah, they're a death cult. They're obsessed with that shit. They look forward to everyone dying. I just want to put that out there, okay? This is something to look forward to. Be like, yay, mission accomplished. This is fucked up. This is fucked up. And that's what they hope happens on May 21st. That's what they want.
Yeah. Well, it'll be very nice when it doesn't happen and we can all laugh at them for a little while before people forget and another date is set.
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to have a contest of when everybody thinks the next date after 2012 is, because that's going to be the next one everyone's going to focus on for the next year, right? 2012. But after that, I want to have like a little betting thing with, you know, pool for what date do you think other people are going to start making a big deal out of and do it for money. Wouldn't that be fun? Like, just having the ability to predict that in advance and winning some cash. Might as well make a game out of it.
Yeah, but if we're thinking about something long term, I mean, who knows where we're going to be in 2030. I don't believe that the rapture is going to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if we managed to fuck ourselves up, off ourselves.
Or at the and you know what? A lot of people would look forward to that. That's what's scary.
Or it'll be a Mad Max type situation, and we can look back on who won, because of course the internet will still be there somehow. And whoever wins can have a daily ration of water and food.
Sweet.
For that one day.
Yay! Extra ration! You won't have to eat your own poo today. That's the good news. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up. We'd like to thank everybody that became a member very recently, had a huge influx. Everybody's, you know, was loving some of the Bible stories, and they've rewarded us as a result. And we want to encourage you also to become members as well. It helps support what we do. We're doing, the better we do, the more we can do this, and the quality just hopefully will continue to improve. That's our goal, and the punctuality will also improve. That's our goal.
We're trying harder.
We're trying to impress you. Okay, please be impressed and become members. That's our spiel, and we're going to catch everybody on Thursday for the bonus show. With that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.